You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
This week on Unforgotten,
we're going to talk about the case of Mary Faye Hunter out of Morgan County in 1967. Her mother, coming home from an appointment, crossed paths with Mary Faye. It seems that no one else came forward to say that she had been seen again after that corner of Johnson Street Southeast and 8th. And unfortunately, on October 14th, 1967, two girls found Mary Faye's remains near Decatur. PD says it's a state case, and the state says that it's a Decatur case.
And says his office has a file on it.
What's the status of the case?
It is, technically, is under investigation.
There is a rather wicked story behind who killed Mary Faye, and that he had helped covering up the crime over the years.
I'd like to see the case closed. I'd like to see it actually formally solved and closed.
Here's to hope.
Hey everyone, this is Sellers.
And this is Stormy.
And this is Unforgotten,
where each episode will highlight unsolved missing, murdered, and suspicious death cases in Alabama in order to raise awareness and hopefully obtain some answers for victims and their families.
Please remember that any individual referenced in the podcast should be considered innocent until found guilty in a court of law, and any opinions or views expressed in the podcast are solely those of participants. Listener discretion is advised, as some of the content discussed in the podcast may contain violence or graphic descriptions and may not be suitable for all audiences.
And now for Season 2's Episode 2, Mary Faye Hunter.
Hey guys, and welcome back. Stormy's out this week as she's taking care of a family member who recently had surgery. But she did research and write this episode, so I'm going to do my best to do it justice by myself. Please come back soon, Stormy. This is a lot harder than it seems like. I'm on like take 12. Before we jump into the episode, I wanted to give a couple of updates on things that we've had going on. Thanks to Mobile County Commissioner Randall DeWitt, the Mobile County Commission has officially approved sponsorship for a billboard in Grand Bay highlighting Stephen Pearson's case. Stephen, a Mobile man, has been missing from the Grand Bay area since December 2000. The billboard, set for installation by March 21st, will feature a photo of Stephen Pearson at the time of his disappearance, along with an age-progressed sketch of what he may look like now. We want to give a special thank you to Lieutenant Craig Shook with ALEA for lending us his talents and providing the sketch. Stephen's billboard is a part of our growing effort to bring attention to unsolved cases across Alabama and keep their stories alive. In addition to the billboard, we've launched a new phone line for tips and case submissions, 251-501-COLD, which is 2653, in case you were wondering. If you have information specifically related to Stephen's case, we ask that you dial extension 2 from the menu. Not only can you call and leave messages on the phone line, you can also text us. So if you're not one to use the phone, I'm not, then feel free to shoot us a text message and we'll get it where it needs to go. We're also working closely with Sheriff Birch and Sergeant Mitch McCray to bring Stephen's case to the podcast soon, so stay tuned. In other news, Nappy Award nominations are open, so you can head on over to votenappies.com to nominate Unforgotten for Best Local Podcast and Alabama Cold Case Advocacy for Best Local Nonprofit. While you're there, check out the other categories to support your favorite Mobile and Baldwin County businesses. The Jackson County K-9 Search, Rescue, and Recovery Team is hosting a glow-in-the-bark golf tournament on Saturday, March 22nd. We've posted details on our Facebook page, and I'll get a link to put in the episode description. But if you're not busy this weekend, head on over. That's for the Jackson County, Mississippi, Jackson County K-9 Team, and help them out. It's a great opportunity to support their efforts. I got to hang out with them a couple of years ago during one of their training sessions, and they are just absolutely wonderful. And they travel all over the U.S. to assist in search and rescue operations. So definitely a good organization to kind of support, and it'll be a lot of fun. We still have a few of the t-shirts left, so you can grab one of those before they're gone. We don't have very many left, but we do have some. Thank you guys for all of your support. You never let us down when these come out, and it always blows my mind how fast they go. Last but not least, also this is a little bit further in advance. The 2025 National Crime Victims' Rights Week is April 6th through the 12th. Vocal has actually posted a list of events across Alabama, and they're going to update that kind of as more events are added. If you want to check out their Facebook page, we'll put a link in the episode description, but it's Victims of Crime and Leniency. These are wonderful events to show up to and support the families. It is not just for families of unsolved cases. It is for any family member or victim that has been obviously a victim of a crime. And they also have a race coming up. They did it last year and they're doing it again this year. I can't remember exactly when it is. So I will get that information for our next episode because it's still a couple months out. So I think I've got all the updates. Stormy is normally the one that helps me kind of keep things organized. So we're going to hope that I got them. And if I miss something, I'm really sorry.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Stephen at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
So getting back to our case today, we're going to talk about the case of Mary Faye Hunter out of Morgan County from way back in 1967. Okay, it's probably not that way back, and my mom probably will get very mad at me if I start talking about that being really far back. Actually, she'll probably be mad at me because I even mentioned that she would know what was going on in the 60s. Sorry, Mom. So a little bit about Morgan County. It's located in north central Alabama, home to history, festivals, and just enough legal loopholes to make it not quite a dry county. Nestled in north central Alabama, Decatur serves as the county seat, while neighboring cities like Hartselle and Priceville keep things lively. And although Huntsville is mostly in Madison County, there are parts that fall into Morgan County, and many Morgan County residents work in Huntsville, blurring those county lines a little bit. Nature lovers can explore the vast Wheeler National Wildlife Refuge, or cool off at Point Mallard Park, home to a massive water park, golf course, and even a Civil War reenactment. But beyond the scenic landscapes and southern charm, Morgan County holds stories. Some light, some dark, and some that remain unsolved. So let's dive into one of them. Let me tell you a little bit about Mary Fay Hunter. Mary Fay was born on May 2, 1933, to James and Edna Hunter. She had one brother, a doctor, James Jr. She played piano and was active in school, including the Sportsmanship Club and Business Education Club at Decatur High School, from which she graduated in 1951. Her senior yearbook byline says, "She made the words of her every day not a reproach, but a song." She started college at Athens State University and finished at Birmingham Southern College, where she was also a member of the Independent Women's Organization in college. According to her Southern yearbook, the Independents are active in every phase of campus life and attain a good share of the campus honors. Mary Fay's talent as a pianist showed she not only played for her church, but also gave lessons when she became an adult. After college, she moved back to Decatur with her parents on 8th Avenue Southeast. An investigative journalist named Brad Golson has researched the case for several years. He worked together on much of the research with Mary Fay's nephew, James Hunter, who is Mary Fay's only living relative now. According to a video made by her nephew, James, she wasn't very social. She went to work at Redstone Arsenal as a ship clerk and secretary and stayed there for 11 years until her death in 1967. On May 6, 1967, a somewhat gloomy Saturday with on and off showers, Mary Fay left home on foot going north on 8th Avenue Southeast. Her mother, coming home from an appointment, crossed paths with Mary Fay just a short way down the block, and it would be the last time she would ever see her daughter.
Not far down the sidewalk from when she left home, she sort of crossed paths with her mother, Atolia. And Atolia was coming back from an eye doctor appointment. And, you know, this was on a Saturday. But, you know, back then, you know, you could go see your eye doctor on a Saturday. It wasn't unusual to have those type of appointments there. And as you can see, they just sort of, everything was in, you know, close proximity to where they lived, where they could just walk. I believe they only had one vehicle. And your grandfather had that. And, you know, he worked at Hunter Furniture as a salesman. So he had that vehicle, and then they would just kind of go walking. And you know, those that are not that familiar with this case, Mary Fay, she didn't even have a driver's license, right, which even for 1967 would have been unusual. You know, just about everybody had a license when they turned 16. You know, getting a car and driving was a big deal, you know, even back then. But for Mary Fay and her lack of social life, you know, she just didn't really see a need for it.
Well, where did she pass her mom? Do we know? Was that Delano Park, or was that?
So that would have been before then.
Before the church.
Oh yeah, it was it wasn't that far down the sidewalk from where they lived. I mean, Atolia was almost home when she saw Mary Fay.
It just makes you wonder if, you know, mom had stayed with her for whatever reason, things might have ended up different.
I don't know, it could be Mary Fay would have had to come up with some sort of reason for her not to go. Because she already had something planned, you know. Right.
See, this is why I know that it affected my grandmother the most.
Yeah, understandably.
That's like a nightmare situation.
It's something she's going to replay in her mind over and over.
Every single day.
Mary Fay proceeded less than a mile and then turned left on Grant Street Southeast and another quarter of a mile until she reached 4th Avenue Southeast in Grant at around 10:30 a.m. for her weekly hair appointment at the House of Beauty, which was right across the street from their church, Central Baptist Church, which, my understanding, is no longer there. After her appointment, roughly 11:30 a.m., she walked one block north up 4th Avenue, turned left onto Johnson Street Southeast, which would be west, and stopped about two-thirds of the way down the block to go into the A&P market at approximately 11:40 a.m. It's confirmed she purchased Instant Potatoes, not sure if anything else, and then left the store roughly 10 minutes later. So, a pretty quick stop. When she left A&P, she headed back the way she came on Johnson. But instead of making the turn, she kept going straight on Johnson for another block before turning south onto 8th Avenue Southeast towards home, which is a more direct route from the A&P store. According to reports from the investigation and shared in one of the local newspapers, Mary Fay was seen on or near the corner of Jackson Street Southeast and 8th Avenue, where the Westminster Presbyterian Church was located.
The proximity to the church to me is interesting.
Yeah.
Or did she know anyone else within that block is also interesting. We don't know, apparently.
Yeah, it just sort of illustrates the small community.
Yeah, did she have any connection to Westminster Church?
Not that I could find. But it is sort of a landmark in that part of town.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, my parents were married in that church.
So we'll post a picture of the map so that you can see all of the streets that she would have traveled on, because it's a little bit confusing. From there, less than a half mile from her home, she seemed to vanish into thin air. It seems that no one else came forward to say that she had been seen again after that corner of Johnson Street Southeast and 8th, at least not officially. She was only 30 minutes late getting home. But because her mother knew her normal routine, and it was just so absolutely unlike her, her parents were already contacting the authorities. Authorities and family searched, but like so many times people say, it felt like she just vanished into thin air. Of course, we know people don't just vanish into thin air. And unfortunately, on October 14th, 1967, two girls found Mary Fay's remains near Flint Creek in the Wheeler National Wildlife Refuge, not far from the Tennessee River.
We all got out, so we got our sticks and we were walking out. We got our poles and Mama and Papa's fishing.
Connie and I, we were bored, and the water was down really, really low, so we could get across the water to the mud flats.
So we're just playing around with our stick. We're flipping stuff. We're finding stuff. We're finding shells.
We always carried a walking stick. Anytime, all four of us had sticks. Anytime you went down to the refuge or out in the woods or something, you never knew what you'd have to poke or pry or turn over or, you know, hit a snake.
Then Kim finds a watch. Shiny something, and she puts it on my arm. And oh, we're playing, we're looking at it, we're just, you know, we're all dressed up. Now you gotta remember, we're little. This is 1967, so we thought we were grown up because we had a watch on my arm. We were just talking and playing, running back and forth.
The next thing we found was a billfold. It was long red billfold, and we were looking at it, and we're like, all right, this is a treasure. So I got to keep the red billfold because Connie had gotten the watch. So walking down through there with our sticks, and we're just knocking the leaves aside. And
as we was walking, then we found bones.
During the initial investigation, the coroner's office held a 6-member coroner's jury, which is new to me. I had not heard of this, and so I actually had to look it up to see exactly what a coroner's jury was. So that's pretty interesting to me. But they held this panel regarding her autopsy. Her death was ruled a homicide by person or persons unknown. and they determined that she had been sexually molested or assaulted. From those who have investigated the case and given interviews in recent years, this was said to be based on the pantyhose she was wearing only being removed from one leg. There's a seemingly strong belief by those who've researched and conducted interviews that she was actually strangled and that there was a different reason altogether for her death.
But luckily for us, Bob was able to share why they came to this conclusion. And it's, you know, it's very, like, they didn't have, they had really nothing to go by, because the remains that were found were basically skeletal. There was hardly anything left on those bones.
Well, yeah, she laid out there the entire summer. It doesn't come as a surprise.
No, no. And so really, and if you're the medical examiner, you know, what can you take from that? There was no bullet holes found in the bones, no indication that she was stabbed. And usually when someone's been stabbed, that'll show up. You know, that'll show up through markings on the bones. There was none of that. So what they figured was she could have been strangled, but she was probably raped. And the reason why they think she was raped was not only, okay, well, this is a female, and usually rape has something to do in the motive. But the only thing they had to go on was one of the stockings that Mary Fay was wearing was, you know, on one leg and off the other. So they took that information and then just tried to infer that, okay, they pulled one side down and left the other side on and then raped her. But of course, later on, based on all the other information we're able to find, we can make a better inference.
From this point, as you can likely assume from that statement, there are a lot of rumors that floated around about who may have killed Mary Fay. But no one has been charged, and as we often hear with these decades-old cases, now going on 58 years, it seems all her records, aside from the autopsy report, were lost. No one can seem to say what happened, when those records were lost, where they went, or anything like that. To add to this common and unfortunate status of the records, there's been a disagreement as to which agency actually owns the investigation. Decatur PD says it's a state case, and the state says that it's a Decatur case. And to top it off, the DA's office does say he has a file in his office of some sort, but he's not releasing the autopsy report to anyone, citing that it's the only evidence left to confirm the facts of the case if they do make an arrest or someone comes forward as a witness. I get that, I guess. You've got to have corroborating evidence. That's the only thing that you've got that would be direct evidence, because literally everything else has been lost. I guess I can kind of understand that. 58 years is a long time.
Fast forward to today, the case remains unsolved. It's not clear where police case files are, if they even exist 52 years after. And what's more, it's a mystery as to who should be investigating Mary Fay's death.
This is the last known footage of Mary Fay Hunter, shot a week before she disappeared in 1967. The video is clearly aging. It's fuzzy and fading. So are the official details on the investigation into her murder. Decatur police say it's a state case, and state investigators say it's Decatur PD's. Decades later, her autopsy report does still exist, but both James Hunter and Brad Golson say getting hands on it has been a challenge. The man who can approve releasing those files, Morgan County District Attorney Scott Anderson.
I was 2 years old when this happened.
Has jurisdiction to prosecute Mary Fay's case and says his office has a file on it.
What's the status of the case?
It is technically under investigation. Now, I'm not saying that there is an active investigation going on. There's not.
But Anderson admits over time, police files have disappeared.
Evidence that had been collected
sometimes goes missing just because agencies change evidence rooms or change buildings and things have to get transferred. A lot of times those things get lost in the transfer.
Lost, damaged, or destroyed files are problematic for prosecutors in cases like this one.
Do you think it's likely that this case will be prosecuted?
No. Still, Anderson says he won't release the autopsy report. He says it could be the only way to verify the truth if someone steps forward confessing Mary Faye's murder. James and Brad believe the case is already compromised, and giving them the autopsy report won't impact it.
James, who goes by Jamie, he's also an independent filmmaker, has the movie written, or at least mostly written, but not started production yet, and isn't sure when that may happen. Brad has co-written a book called What Happened to Mary Faye Hunter, which lays out the investigation he has done into the case, which Jamie is in agreement with. And though we don't want to state something as fact without proof, or name people that haven't been charged, or even formally named publicly as suspect, there is a rather wicked story behind who killed Mary Faye, and that he had helped covering up the crime over the years.
D.A. Anderson says he remembers talk of the town about the case while he was growing up.
The theories, the rumors that were going around about who did it, who may have done it, and they're still floating around today.
Mary Faye may have been perceived as socially awkward, but that doesn't mean she was without interactions or relationships. One of the more persistent and seemingly well-founded rumors is that she had been involved with a married man and had become pregnant. There's a lot to this theory, and it is incredibly detailed. Apparently, Brad Golson goes into this a good bit in his book, What Happened to Mary Faye Hunter, the one that we referenced earlier. So if you want to read about this, you can check out that. But it's not something that I feel overly comfortable going into at this point in time. Maybe we can follow up on this at a later date. If you're interested in this case, though, which I am, to be honest, good job, Stormy, on picking this one out, because guess what I'll be doing when I get done with this. There is quite a bit of information online, social media, and books, and there's even a podcast or two. So you can decide for yourself if the standing theory is correct. It isn't likely that 58 years or more later, her case will ever have an official resolution, but her only living family member feels he knows the real story. Who knows? With medical and technical advances, if the right pieces of evidence are presented and tested and a witness with corroborating evidence is taken seriously by law enforcement, maybe one day Mary Faye Hunter will have justice. Or maybe they'll come across her file. You never know.
As Mary Faye's case remains unsolved, her family holds on to pictures, this ever-fading footage, in hope.
I'd like to see the case closed. I'd like to see it actually formally solved and closed.
Here's to hope. Indicator, Chelsea Brunsel, WHNT, News 19.
If you believe you might be a person with information on Mary Faye Hunter's case, please come forward. You can submit tips on our website. You can call our new cold case number, which is 251-501-COLD-2653. Or you can contact the authorities directly at one of the following numbers. Decatur Police Department, 256-341-4635, or the Morgan County Sheriff's Department at 256-301-1174. Since Alabama Cold Case Advocacy's creation, we have dedicated innumerable hours to researching and networking in an effort to provide the largest platform we can to the cases we share. We shoulder all associated expenses with Alabama Cold Case Advocacy out of our own pocket, including the subscription fees for researching and production of the Unforgotten podcast to provide a cost-free avenue for the victims' families of those cases.
We hope you will join in our efforts to raise awareness of Alabama's missing and murdered and support these families who have been forced to carry the immeasurable loss of their loved ones and the fight for answers. If you appreciate our mission and you are inspired to make a donation, your extra support will enable the ACCA to continue our research, share the cold cases, and help those families know that they are also unforgotten.
Unforgotten is an Alabama Cold Case Advocacy podcast recorded in conjunction with Riverside FM, hosted and distributed by Red Circle to your favorite podcast platforms. Content, research, artwork, and production are by Sellers and Stormy of Alabama Cold Case Advocacy. Credits for music, sound clips, special mentions, and research sources can be found in each episode's description. Your support helps us continue producing Unforgotten and further Alabama Cold Case's mission of advocacy and awareness. There are a few ways you can help us light the path. Make a one-time or monthly donation to Unforgotten through Red Circle. Sign up for a one-time or recurring donation through the ACCA website. Or subscribe to the Unforgotten Patreon channel for early access to ad-free episodes. You will find the links for all three in our episode descriptions. Another cost-free way to be of great help is to follow us on social media. But most importantly, whatever you do, tell everyone you know about these cases. Sharing their stories is one of the most effective ways to help find resolution for Alabama's cold cases. Be the spark. Thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, justice may be delayed, but the victims and their families remain unforgotten.
That was good. You did good on that one.
Thanks.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.